You're listening to The Morning Magazine. It's Friday, February 25th. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for tuning in to listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Grammy Award-winning Fisk Jubilee Singers will perform at Mackey Auditorium this weekend. We hear from the director about the music's legacy. After that, from our Rocky Mountain Community Radio Collective, a lack of policing on tribal lands leaves residents vulnerable in southern Utah. Then, as always, it's our regular FridayFeature.org. This week, we hear about a program to help people reintegrate into society after they get out of prison. 8:30 Connections comes your way. Then it's the Morning Sound Alternative with 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's coming up, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
Ukrainians living in Colorado rallied in solidarity outside the state capitol Thursday as Russian troops waged war on their homeland. Governor Jared Polis released a statement condemning Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of the Ukraine. He offered support to the thousands of Ukrainians living in the state, saying that, quote, Colorado stands on the side of freedom. Polis said he and other federal leaders are urging Congress to suspend the federal gas tax and push forward with renewable energy to prevent severe economic fallout. He stated that clean resources would ensure energy independence from volatile world affairs. Polis followed up his statement with an executive order pledging to restrict Colorado's state resources from supporting the Russian government or Russian state-owned companies. In a separate statement, Colorado Treasurer Dave Young said his department reviewed the state's investment portfolio and found no Russian-owned assets. Colorado and three other Rocky Mountain states are seeking federal funding for a regional hydrogen hub to meet climate change goals. Governor Jared Polis and the governors of New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming announced plans to compete for $8 billion of funding from the U.S. Department of Energy. Polis created a clean hydrogen plan last year to process and store the alternative fuel. The state's greenhouse gas reduction plan targets a 50% decrease in emissions by 2030 and a 90% reduction by 2050. Denver Public Schools are using federal COVID-19 relief money to avoid layoffs. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The district said that it received $16 million for schools in the 2021-2022 school year. The Denver Post reports that the schools also received and used an additional $3 million last semester in relief money to avoid laying off employees as declining student enrollment cuts into school budgets. In addition to declining enrollments, schools also are facing shortages in nurses, bus drivers, food service workers, and teachers during the pandemic. DPS said that an additional $6.5 million will be used next school year to help in keeping schools fully staffed. This month, the district placed a hiring freeze on vacancies in its central office and said it will cut the number of executive-level positions and have employees in senior leadership positions reapply for their jobs. DPS is facing funding cuts as enrollment in schools is expected to decline in the coming years. There are also plans to close schools as part of its downsizing plans. The district is creating a committee made up of families and other community members to determine what criteria should be used to close a school. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Denver police arrested over 40 people at Union Station's bus terminal on Thursday as part of a large-scale operation. The Denver Sheriff's Department assisted with the ongoing effort to arrest people with outstanding warrants and those engaging in illegal activities. In December, the RTD announced that it was taking action to curb activities such as drug use in bathrooms. Thursday's arrest included 10 for felony offenses such as dealing drugs. The other arrests were for misdemeanor warrants and drug possession. Since January 1st, police have made over 500 arrests at the station. The Colorado Department of Transportation will begin monitoring a pilot system Monday that's expected to reduce traffic congestion on a portion of I-25. The Smart 25 pilot project is the first of its kind in North America and is modeled after a successful system in Australia. There, the system increased traffic flow by 25% and speeds improved by up to 60% during rush hour. These numbers are equal to adding a highway lane. The system uses vehicle detectors alongside highway entry ramps. The devices measure the number of vehicles, their speed, and the length of the line of vehicles waiting to merge onto the highway. This data is linked to the timing of the green lights that allow vehicles to enter the highway. Freezing temperatures throughout the Front Range today with a chance of snow in the early afternoon and evening. New snow accumulation of less than half an inch is possible. In Boulder, partly sunny with a high near 27 and lows tonight around 9. In Denver, a high around 29 with wind chill values as low as negative 1. Lows tonight around 9. In Fort Collins, highs near 27 with wind chill values as low as negative 10. Lows tonight around 3 with wind chill as low as negative 6. Outside the Boulder studios, it's 9 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. The Grammy Award-winning Fisk Jubilee Singers will play a free concert at the Mackey Auditorium on Sunday afternoon. The group is one of the oldest a cappella choirs in the nation. It formed a few years after the Civil War ended in 1866 at Fisk University, the nation's first historically black college or university, and one of the only places that existed where emancipated slaves could get an education. KGNU's Michelle Simpson spoke with Dr. Paul Kwame, the group's current director, who says the university created the group with a plan that it could tour around the U.S. and bring in some extra money for the new institution.
I understood also that the tour was pretty challenging on a number of fronts. That the tour initially didn't raise the money that was hoped for. And after weeks of performing, the tour wasn't even breaking even at that stage. And so they decided to expand the choral repertoire. Do I have that correct?
Yes. George White had trained them to sing Western classical music with the hope that it would make it easier for the white audiences to listen to them. They got to Oberlin, Ohio, and people did not have much regard for them because slavery had just ended and these people were black young students from Fisk University. So that particular day, instead of being placed in front of the audience, they were placed in the balcony and asked to sing. So people just got up from their seats and started walking about, talking. So the original Fisk Jubilee Singers in that situation said, if these people will not listen to us as we sing, then let us sing our own songs to ourselves. Then they started singing Steal Away very quietly. Steal away. And all of a sudden, people became quiet and walked back, some even with tears in their eyes, and went back to sit. They used the power and beauty of their music and the beauty of their singing to win the love of people. So for us, let me say just human beings, there's a lot we can do with music and through music. Of course, these days we talk about riots and other types of things, but the Fisk Jubilee Singers used the power of their beautiful music to win the love of people.
A musicologist, Horace Boyer, was quoted as saying, they said you could hear the soft weeping. But I wanted you to just say, a little bit more about the meanings. When we think in terms of spirituals, for example, and I think about the music I grew up listening to and hearing, and that my grandmother and grandmother's grandmother, singing, the music had such meaning, and not just because it sounded good,
not just
because it carried a message. Oftentimes that music was used to communicate.
Definitely Africans, or when we talk about spirituals as they were used by the slaves, it gives us a clear understanding of how that African thing came with them. Let me relate that. For example, within African communities, before communication developed, if, for example, people in one village needed to send a message across to another village, they would send the message by playing on talking drums.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So when slaves were on the plantations, one of the original Fitz Jubilee singers wrote in his book that the story behind Steal Away to Jesus was the slaves went to the plantation, worked all day, and then at night they would cross a river to go and hear an Indian preacher. So the slave masters made an attempt at preventing that practice. But the slaves would go back onto the plantations, and while working, one person would start singing, "Steal Away to Jesus." The next person close to the one who sat at the sound would pick up and sing. And all of a sudden, the singing would spread all over the plantation. To the slave master, these were just Africans making music as they worked. But to the slaves, they were communicating among themselves.
I couldn't hear nobody pray, crossing Jordan. Couldn't hear nobody pray, oh Lord. I couldn't hear nobody pray, oh. I couldn't hear nobody pray.
Dr. Kwame, tell us more about the Grammys, and tell us a little bit more about that 150th anniversary.
Yeah, to be honest, it changed my life. It changed the perception of the Fitz Jubilee Singers, because all of a sudden, people from all over the world getting to hear about the Fitz Jubilee Singers. And of course, the importance of Fitz Jubilee Singers and their music to the culture of America. One of the key responsibilities we have is the preservation of this legacy, the preservation of the music to the world.
Dr. Kwame, again, I'm so thankful for you making the time, and we cannot wait. 2 to 4 Sunday afternoon. Please do yourself a favor. Do your friends a favor. Let them know that this is coming. And as I said, thank you so, so much.
You're very welcome.
The Navajo Nation has around 250 police officers for some 27,000 square miles. That's an area just larger than West Virginia. Add to this jurisdictional constraints for county police, and it means many on the reservation can't depend on speedy responses to crime. In November of last year, Utah's Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women and Girls Task Force heard tribal residents' concern over a lack of law enforcement. Justin Higginbottom from KZMU reports.
It's a sunny, clear winter day in Monument Valley. Red sandstone buttes tower over the landscape. Tourists visit from around the world to see them. This is a border community. Residents not only straddle the Arizona and Utah state lines, but the El Jeto chapter of the Navajo Nation is on the reservation's northwest frontier. Kianta, Arizona, the closest Navajo police department, is about an hour south. Utah's San Juan County Sheriff's Department in Monticello, is 2 hours north.
It used to be that we would dial 911, it would go automatically to Kayenta. But as of late, we found that when you dial 911, it goes into Monticello. And Monticello then has to transfer your call back to Kayenta to get the call. And then Kayenta also had a listed number, and you would just dial that directly. And again, as of late, you dial that number and nobody ever answers.
That's Marietta Bedoni. She's the El Jeito chapter secretary and treasurer. Last month, she says she laid out her concerns over crime and enforcement to her tribe's Law and Order Committee. There's bootlegging, liquor is illegal on the Navajo Nation, and theft. Tourists swipe crafts, cars crash on the narrow highway, and it can be hours before police respond, if they come at all. There's also more violent crime.
I was in an abusive relationship, and I would end up calling the police department, and they would just never show up.
She says she ran into other women with similar stories while waiting in a Kayenta court lobby for a protection order.
In a sense, it's almost like you're not only traumatized by what happens with the crime, but now you're being abused by law enforcement.
Traveling west across red desert and islands of white rocky outcrops, there's Red Mesa. It's another remote Navajo Nation community in Utah.
Well, either way, we're neglected, especially here in San Juan County, the reservation part. Even the Navajo Nation tells us, you know, you guys are all on your own over there. No, we're not. We're part of you guys over there. So we feel neglected anyway.
That's Marilyn Hawley. She's the vice president of the Red Mesa Chapter House. Chapter houses are a form of local government for Navajos on the reservation. They are especially important here, so far away from towns and services.
And we complain every year, all the time. We send in resolutions saying we need at least an officer here, you know, but that doesn't happen.
Navajo PD comes from New Mexico to her community, which is on the northeast border of the Navajo Nation. She says criminals can be bold in this area. One resident was tied up during a home invasion. The thieves cleaned him out.
One of the guys said, "You want me to kill him?" It's what he heard. But the lady, the girl that was with them said, "No. Leave them alone," and they left. Stuff like that, you know, and the police officers, I don't know when they showed up.
That was about 2 years ago. Holly says when police do respond and make arrests, they often don't hold suspects for long.
The Navajo Nation system doesn't work. If they arrest somebody, they take him into Shuprock. They are released the next day.
Like Bedoni in Monument Valley, Holly also wants to see more police in her community. Charlene So is the Navajo Nation's council delegate for 5 chapters in northern Arizona and southern Utah, including Red Mesa and Monument Valley. She says crime has been on the rise. Sexual and domestic abuse, bootlegging, people making drugs in tract houses.
Some of these constituents have been scared to speak about it in fear of retaliation. And even if we were to tell a police officer, they assume that the police officers will not conduct a thorough investigation for search and seizure, and that is a long process, and that leaves a wide open space for retaliation.
She says hiring new officers is a challenge. There's the usual lack of funding, but also finding recruits is hard.
We don't have enough qualified individuals, you know, that pass those background checks and the physical tests. It kind of gives us a slim graduating class.
So says there's only about a 10% graduation rate for new recruits. Bedoni in Monument Valley thinks there's another reason why police aren't often seen in the area. She's worked in legal services and done ride-alongs with police, and she hears what they say.
Some of the new recruits were hesitant to work in this district just because of how they're informed that this is one of the most dangerous districts to work with.
2 Navajo Nation police were ambushed and murdered near her community in the 80s. It left a scar. Locals still talk about it.
Right behind the poles here, there's another home. The guy there killed his wife, and then he killed himself. But there's been a number of cases, like I say, about 2-3 other cases where that happened.
John Young of the San Juan County Sheriff's Department says his officers will respond in emergencies on the Navajo Nation. But when they arrive, their hands can be tied due to a lack of jurisdiction.
So now instead of just thinking, are we responding to, you know, protect and possibly save lives, how far out am I hanging myself, and how far out am I willing to go out on that limb when I'm not going to be protected or backed by any agency or jurisdiction because I don't have jurisdiction in that area. It's a confusing thing, and I don't know what the solution is.
There's talks of cross-deputization between San Juan Police and the Navajo Nation. That program existed in the past. And there's a planned Navajo Police substation for Aneth, a town near Red Mesa. For many on the reservation, they don't care if it's Navajo Nation Police or Utah Police or the FBI that respond. They just want help. Justin Higginbottom for KZMU News.
Welcome to .org, KGMU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Breakthrough is a group who enters Colorado prisons to assist those incarcerated to give them a chance at redemption through entrepreneurship and employment readiness education. Executive Director, Stacy Putka.
Our mission is to justice reform. Reforming society's response to incarceration, building connections across communities, equipping our currently incarcerated program participants for successful reintegration. So the recidivism rate in Colorado is about 50%. Anyone who works in any department of corrections in our country would tell you that the system is not really set up for rehabilitation. Right now, incarceration is still very punitive, and it's really difficult to get those opportunities for rehabilitation kind of built into a system that just wasn't designed from the beginning to function in that way. We have a very progressive Department of Corrections here, and they're always thinking about different creative ways to focus on rehabilitation, and we're so grateful. They are really eager about partnering with people like us. We come in to provide the soft skills and hard skills training to people that are incarcerated so they have those opportunities. Successful reintegration for us is when our people are stable in the community, they're employed, and ideally they're working in the industry of their choice. It's actually not super hard for people to get just any job if they have a felony conviction, and they're usually getting a job that doesn't have a lot of economic mobility. So we want our people to not just have a job, but to have a job where they have an opportunity to earn the living wage and to work in a field that they're passionate about, that they're interested in. Our goal isn't necessarily for all of our people to start a business, but it's to think like an entrepreneur, to think like an owner. And we actually bring in volunteers from the community. It gives business owners and leaders an opportunity to volunteer with us, to learn a little bit about our people. And then when we say to them, hey, would you be interested in hiring folks when they come home? The answer is always yes, because they've gotten to know them throughout volunteering in the program. Volunteering is one way that you can engage with us. Another one is to hire our program participants. So if you run a small business or a large business, or you're in a hiring position, you can contact us about hiring people that have come out of our program. And we're always looking for opportunities to speak and to start to shift the way our community and our society thinks about people with criminal histories.
I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to Rosanna Longo-Better, Michelle Simpson, Justin Higginbottom, Steve Miller, and Benita Lee for your contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections. As always, the phone lines will be open. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.